Jordan and I are not that cool. Most of the bands that we listen to and all of the artists that we've covered on this podcast so far are famous. You've already probably heard of them. But today, we're going to dig deep and we're going to go with one of our favorite artists of all time, an artist that you probably haven't heard of. But we hope that after listening to this episode, you will love him as much as we do. You'll listen to him and you'll support him. Today's Sounds Good to Us is about Corey Brannan. Down on the corner of what I want and what I tend to get. Day drinking and dreaming of you, I let the ashtray smoke my last cigarette. I don't really have a segue here, but I'll tell you, I'm Gregory Hill.
And I'm Jordan Stone.
This is a music podcast where two friends of 21 years and counting pick one artist per episode and talk about why that artist is awesome to us. Even if you don't think so, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram. And listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. Jordan, I've been waiting 17 episodes for this. I've dropped Corey's name in almost every single episode just to hopefully put it out there in the world and make it happen. And honestly, I'm nervous, Jordan. I'm kind of stressed here. There's no artist that's more important to me than who we're going to talk about today. I just don't want to let him down. I don't want to let you down. Jordan, we're going to get started by talking about what Corey Brannan means to us. And so my first question for you is, just tell me how you first heard about Corey Brannan.
I'm going first, obviously, in this category, and I can tell you I'm not going to steal Greg's thunder. He introduced me to Corey Brannan. He'll tell that
Damn
story.
Right.
But Corey is an extremely rare exception for me in my musical fandom. I consider myself to be a big mainstream music fanatic, and Corey Brannan is pretty far from mainstream. He only has one song with 1 million plays on Spotify, and even that surprises me to some extent that he has that, and he deserves way more credit and recognition. That's why we're doing this today. But what makes Corey special and why he means a lot to me were his live shows that we've seen, Greg. He played by himself, but he had the energy of an arena rock band.
Yeah.
As one person with one guitar, he's a very frenetic performer. I call his style controlled chaos.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to see this, go on YouTube, type in Corey Brannan live show and check it out. We've seen Corey live many times in the early 2000s with less than, what, 50 people
even
in the audience?
10 to 20.
20, 10, 15 people in the audience in bars and clubs, small enough where you could have a conversation with him between songs. I mean, you and I are sitting 10 feet from him as he's performing. And it came to the point where he even started to recognize us, which was really cool. Greg and I would meet up with him after the show, just have a few questions for him and talk to him. It's pretty cool. And that's a unique experience. I mean, how many artists, Greg, have you done that with on a consistent basis?
On a consistent basis, none.
Exactly. It was really fun. It was a great time in our lives. And it's something I will never have with 99% of the artists that I love. I'll never be able to have them recognize me and have conversations with them. And so for that reason, this episode today, I think, means a little more than maybe any we'll ever do. And I think that's a good segue to pass it over to you, Greg.
Sure. So I actually have three stories. Like I said, Corey means a lot to me. And so the first story, I'll set the tone. The year is 2003. It's the first semester of our senior year of high school. And kind of at this point, you have senioritis. You're already in college. It doesn't really matter what you do. So I decided to take a creative writing class because I hope that it'll be really easy and I just won't have to work very hard and I can just kind of show up and just get through my senior year and go to college. It was taught by Ronald Riddle, who was actually a songwriter for a band called Riddle. And he was also, though, and the reason why I thought the class was going to be easy was because he was a football coach. I thought it was going to be easy. I didn't think it was going to be a class that would have any sort of shaping on my life. But very early on in the semester, he was talking about songwriting and the differences between poetry and how songwriters sort of evoke feelings. And he took out a CD player and he put a CD in and he said, "This is, I think, the best songwriter in the world. His name's Corey Brannan." And he played us the song "Jolene" off of "Hell You Say." "You're a stained glass window on a back door screen. Yeah, you're the things you say and the things you mean." I was immediately blown away by lines like, "She's a stained glass window on a back door screen." Immediately, I recognized Corey's talent. I went to Grimey's Music after school as fast as I could. I wish I could have left school at that point and just driven there. But I got to Grimey's, and thankfully, they had the CD in stock. And I probably listened to it 100 times in the next week. Every single song was beautiful. Every song was unlike anything that I'd really heard at that point. I introduced him to Jordan, which in our relationship, I've introduced probably maybe two bands to Jordan, and he's introduced 100 to me. So this is definitely an outlier. And then we would go see him, like Jordan said, even in high school, we would drive up to East Nashville and go to a bunch of clubs. We're a couple of kids from the suburbs. Shout out to Jonathan Freddie, who would also come along, who's a big Corey fan. And we'd just sit there at the Radio Cafe or Three Crow Bar or the Basement, and with a very small crowd, have this very intimate experience listening to Corey play. And from that moment forward, Corey has been one of my top artists. My second story is when I was in college, 12 Songs came out, and I was having a party at my house, and I was sitting on the couch with this very pretty girl, and things were going well. I thought she was cute. She thought I was cute. Things were progressing, and I was pretty excited. As we're sitting there, I'd been drinking a lot, and I realized that 12 Songs just came out. I immediately got up. I didn't say anything, and then I just sort of drunkenly stumbled to my room. I closed the door, and I locked it. I downloaded it on iTunes, and I listened to the entire album right then and there. Needless to say, it didn't work out with the girl, but I love the album. My third story is I wrote two theses in college. One was on the history of the development of the Peruvian bourgeoisie in the 19th century. It couldn't get more boring than that. But the other one was on Corey and what his music meant to me. And I actually pulled it up on Google Drive. I found it yesterday. And it's the terrible sort of masturbatory writing that only a 22-year-old male can produce, who just only pretty much read Chuck Klosterman, Nick Hornby, and thought his ideas were smart. Let me give you a quote from that 2007 Gregory so I can tell you how long I've loved this artist. "Popular music infects my life, but The Hell You Say is a particular poignant recording for me personally. And while I'm sure each person who listens to it feels the same, the record seems as though it was written for me alone. It's astonishing that someone whom I've never even had a meaningful conversation with can know absolutely everything about me, and I want to find out why that's the case. Is this outlook healthy? I'm not sure. I probably should give myself more credit for thinking, but I won't." And so even at that point, 14 years ago, I had a very similar sentiment about Corey's music. It's just, even though he wrote it about him, it always felt like it was written for me.
Fun side note, I was scanning the notes, and I landed on this bullet point randomly, and I was like, what the hell is Greg talking about? I didn't know the context, so I read the bullet point above it, and I was like, oh, okay. I was like, man, we're really going down a deep path here in the podcast.
Yeah, wrote basically like 3 to 5 pages on every song on that album in that thesis. I'll share it with you sometime. All right, so let's get into some of the details about Corey. So Corey Dallas Brannon was born on December 15th, 1974 in Memphis, Tennessee. He later grew up in South Haven, Mississippi. His dad was a drummer. He was a big musical influence on him. He played a lot of gospel in the house, rock, blues, country. You hear all these different influences in Corey's music. He eventually led a Black Sabbath cover band, which is always something you heard a lot when he first started playing music. Similar to the Avett Brothers, you have this sort of country folk songwriter, but has like punk and metal roots, which to Jordan's point earlier, the energy that he brings kind of comes from that. He moved to Memphis, where he was actually a bartender at the Peabody Hotel for a time. Shout out to the Peabody Hotel. It's the place with the ducks that walk up and down the elevator every day. And then it was in his early 20s that he started listening to a lot of John Prine. He started writing his own songs. He started playing open mic nights. And in 2001, he released The Hell You Say on Mad Jack Records. He eventually played on the David Letterman show in 2003. Dave apparently loved his music personally and wanted to make sure that Corey had a national stage. And I'll say this now, this isn't just part of his background, but The Hell You Say, I think, is the best album by any songwriter in the 2000s. In 2006, he released 12 songs, also on Mad Jack. Most of the songs were written at the same time as the ones on Hell You Say. Jody Steven from Big Star, which I'm a big Star fan, he played drums. It's a great record. In 2011, he released Mutt, which is a reference to what he usually says when asked what genre his music is. In 2014, then he released No Hit Wonder, which was recorded in Sound Kitchen in Nashville. Jordan, did you know that?
I did not know that.
Tell us what Sound Kitchen means to you.
Yeah, I worked at Sound Kitchen in high school on staff there as an intern, as a high schooler with people twice my age. And it's where I learned a lot of what I know about music today.
Absolutely. Other topics about No Hit Wonder. Jason Isbell is one of the many contributors to the record and was also named a top country record of 2014 by Rolling Stone. And then in 2017, Corey released his, for now, last record called Adios. Robbie Crowell from Deertick, shout out to any Deertick fans here, plays drums throughout the record. Amanda Shires, formerly from Drive-By Truckers, plays fiddle and does some backup vocals. And then Pitchfork says that this is probably his best record. Rolling Stone said it was one of the best country albums of the year. And he now lives in Nashville with his wife and his kid. And you can see what he's up to on Instagram. He's certainly still touring, but that brings us up to modern day. Jordan, Corey obviously is an incredibly important artist to us, as you can probably tell as a listener at this point. Let's get through, just for people who haven't heard him before, each of us pick a song and talk through why we think that song is emblematic of the sound that Corey has.
This wasn't easy to do, for sure. He has so many songs. It's not really he spans genres, it's just sounds. His songs sound all different. And I had a tough time deciding, so I kind of picked the one I wanted to introduce first, and it does describe his sound. It's The Prettiest Waitress in Memphis from 12 Songs. She's the prettiest waitress in Memphis, and I think she's flirting with me and reading them specials. And as we mentioned in our stories, Greg and I heard these Corey songs before they were recorded onto an album, which is, again, not many artists I can say that about, where you knew the song before the album came out. And this was easily one of my favorites at that time. I knew every word to this song before the studio version came out. And this song really shows his range. Rockabilly, country, folk, that unique guitar style that he has, that frenetic style of guitar play. And then all of that wrapped in this amazing songwriting that Corey can do. And not many artists really have that ability to do what he does.
Her name and her number on a sweet and low packet is the best poem that I've ever read. That's a great choice. Mine is The Corner from Mutt.
Down on the corner of what I want and what I tend to get, did drinking, dreaming of.
It's a beautiful song. It's a sad song. In interviews, you hear him talk about this song live. It's him explaining that his career hasn't really met his own expectations. And for someone as talented as Corey is, that's a really sad concept. It starts out by saying, down in the corner of what I want and what I tend to get. And so it's clear to him that he hasn't made it where he thought he would. And now as he's getting older, feels a little bit past his prime. A funny story, Chris Caraba of Dashboard Confessional, who's a huge Corey Brandon fan. Dashboard Confessional actually covers Corey's songs when they play live. He once covered this song and he actually screwed up one of the lyrics. And he said, down in the corner of what I want and what I intend to get. And so Corey made a joke when he was playing the song live once where he said, it's the perfect explanation of the difference in the life outlook of Chris Caraba and me, Chris being a much more positive person. Also shows how good of a finger picker he is. Jordan mentioned his guitar style. Corey said he taught himself guitar. And what's interesting is we watched Corey become a really, really great guitarist over the course of his career from when he first started playing to now. And even now that he plays much more electric, he still finger picks, and it's a really unique sound that guitar fans should like. And, you know, I think it's a great showcase for his vocals, which are in some ways very soft and sweet, but in some places can be very loud and gravelly. It shows how haunting his lyrics can be. They really stay with you, and it shows off how great of a songwriter he is. For folks who might not have listened to a lot of Corey Brandon, but might know some other artists of similar veins, let's get in some artist comps. Jordan, I want you to get us started. Tell us about a band and pick a song by that band or artist that you think is pretty similar to Corey.
First up for me is Whiskey Town. And Whiskey Town was Ryan Adams' first band. I think he was a teenager when he started the band. But anyway, he went solo, obviously, and I wanted to do Ryan Adams solo here, but I just did it for the Avett Brothers, so I chose Whiskey Town. I chose the song 16 Days.
Got 16 days, one for every time I've gone away, one for every time I should have stayed.
Yeah, I remember reading the first review that I read about The Hell You Say, and they mentioned three artists that Corey was coming into the stratosphere with. One was Ryan Adams, which is a high comparison at that point in time. The other one was John Prine, which you're comparing with like Michael Jordan of songwriting. And then the other one was Connor Oberst from Bright Eyes. My choice is Lyle Lovett Lyle Lovett was once married to Julia Roberts, so shout out to Lyle Lovett. He's a songwriter from Texas who's just really not respected enough, in my opinion, for how good of a writer he was. He's just kind of not taken seriously, or he's not really remembered, but Lyle Lovett is an elite songwriter. He has a very similar sense of humor as Corey does, but he can also really write incisive lyrics that just cut you to the bone. Best example of Lyle Lovett and its similarity to Corey is actually a song that Corey has frequently covered live, and it's by far my favorite Lyle Lovett song. It's called Creeps Like Me.
I wear grandmother's ring on my finger, on my finger. She had it to the gold.
All right, next up is Jason Isbell. He's an incredible songwriter, and he has this song called Cover Me Up.
So go leave your boots by the bed. We ain't leaving this room. Someone needs medical help more than magnolias.
I consider this to be one of the best written songs of the last 20 years, no question. It's funny because it almost sounds like a Corey song. And so I chose it more for the songwriting, less for the sound. I recommend checking out more Jason Isbell. And this song has been covered by many, many bands and artists for good reason.
There's a great joke online. Jason Isbell is very active on Twitter. When Morgan Wallen did his cover of Cover Me Up, you know, obviously a lot of people know who Morgan Wallen is. So Jason Isbell's songwriting buddies always, whenever Jason Isbell will say something, will say, well, you know, who are you? You're only famous because you covered a song by Morgan Wallen. All right, so my next is John Prine. We've talked about John Prine on this podcast. Everyone should know who John Prine is. If you don't, please go listen to John Prine. John Prine's the best songwriter who's ever lived. That's my opinion, but it's also a fact. And even if you don't think he's the best, he's definitely my favorite, so you can give me that. He died last year of COVID-19 complications. His just death absolutely gutted me, and it still does to this day. Corey attributes a lot of his own songwriting style to listening to a lot of John Prine when he started writing, which is also very similar to how John Prine started his career. If you've heard the story about John Prine, he was a mail person and he was delivering mail and he'd go to this bar. And at one point he said, man, this person up there on stage really sucks. And someone said, all right, John, if you think you can do better, try. And then John Prine did. And then he had an entire career. So Corey has kind of some similar there. John, like Lyle Lovett, snuck a lot of humor into his lyrics, but he's also able to write about the human condition just in a style that is really simple for anyone to be able to understand. It's not complicated. It's not verbose, but it's so simple that really no one can replicate its beauty. I chose one of my favorite songs of his, Souvenirs, for the Avett Brothers episode last time, but I'll choose All the Best here because I think it's the one that sounds the most like Corey.
I wish you love and happiness. I guess I wish you all the best.
Next is Tyler Childers. Greg introduced me to Tyler Childers about a year ago, and I am forever grateful. Thank you, Greg. Because he is probably my favorite folk artist of the last 5 to 10 years. He's that good. His entire catalog is fantastic, but for his Corey Brannon comp, I chose the song Lady May.
Now I ain't the sharpest chisel that your hands have ever held, but darling, I could love you well.
Just a simple folk song, sounds very similar to Corey Brannon. The first time I heard it, I thought Corey Brannon. And if you love Lady May, you'll love Corey Brannon and vice versa.
My choice, and this is not just pandering to Jordan because Jordan is a massive Bruce Springsteen fan, but I actually think, and this might sound weird, that there are a lot of comparisons between Bruce Springsteen and Corey. If you're a big Bruce Springsteen fan, which I would not consider myself a big one, although I am a fan, you've probably heard some of his very early singer-songwriter stuff. This was not recorded on albums. This was done at places around New York City, and he's playing folk music, and he's playing country music, and he's just a straight songwriter. You think of Bruce, you think arena rock, you think big guitars, you think the whole band, but early Bruce was just stripped down, and he is a fantastic songwriter. As he's gotten older, Bruce has obviously gone more electric, which so is Corey. Corey plays a lot more electric music than acoustic music nowadays. And Bruce Springsteen is known for writing songs for every person, but with very specific lyrics about his life. And that's pretty much exactly what Corey does as well. And for the Corey comp, I'll pick one of my favorite Bruce songs, Mary Queen of Arkansas.
Mary, my queen, your song.
It was from 1973's Greetings from Asbury Park, New Jersey, which was his first album. And so you start to really hear the early days of Bruce, the mostly acoustic songs from The Boss that are very stripped down. All right, so let's get into the songs. Every episode, we attempt to create what we believe to be the perfect playlist for that band. Check out the playlist that we're making. The easiest way to find it is by going to www.soundsgoodtous.com. There's a link there that you can check them all out. Let's pick some of those songs here, Jordan, and talk through them. Why don't you get us started?
Track one for me is the song that introduced me to Corey Brand, so I'm going to choose the same one. It's Miss Ferguson from The Hell You Say. And this is his biggest hit, in quotes, by far. Even though it only has 107,000 plays on Spotify, which amazes me it's not more, it's his biggest hit. It's the one he performed on Letterman that Greg referenced earlier. But back in 2002 in Tennessee, this was a hit to us. He would try not to play it at live shows. I remember this because I'd be the guy in the front row yelling, "Miss Ferguson, Miss Ferguson." And he'd roll his eyes, then he'd play it, and everyone would sing along and be happy and all that good stuff. But it's his hit, so he didn't want to play it as much. Lastly, this is his most approachable song, which is why I chose it for track one. And from a mainstream music perspective, it's probably his best song, too. If we're just talking straight up like radio airplay, I would pick Miss Ferguson.
So, as Jordan said, he'd be the guy in the shows yelling out what to play. And then other people would do it too, though. It wasn't just Jordan. So you're in a room and there's like maybe 20 people at Three Crow Bar in East Nashville, Tennessee. And he's up on stage and he's playing it. People are buying him drinks. People are giving him cigarettes because he was still smoking at the time. People are yelling out songs. Like Jordan said, he didn't want to play this song or that song. People keep yelling. And this beautiful woman in the front row yells out, "Play Crush." And it was this weird moment of like a high schooler being like, holy shit, songwriters have it going on. Because the way I interpreted that moment was that she had a crush on him and he smiled and laughed and then he played it. And it was the sexiest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. Okay, so my first one is Love Song 8 from Hell You Say.
And I was thinking to myself, might as well be you.
The song is just absolutely beautiful, and it's, I think, a really good representation of what his early recordings sound like. This is almost exactly like he plays it live. It's basically him just playing his version into the microphone and putting it on an album, which is not the only thing that he should do, but in this case, I really, really love the choices that were made on the recording. Corey's a goddamn poet. I mean, this song is just, it's stripped down. It's mostly just acoustic guitar and his voice. And you hear some really amazing lines about romance. One is, "Came together so hard, we broke both our hearts. And I can't shed the skin she's underneath." These are fantastic lines by a fantastic songwriter. And Love Song 8 is one of my favorite songs by Corey.
Next track is unquestionably my favorite Corey Brannan song and is called Tame from The Hell You Say.
She's got a hornet's nest inside her chest and a swarming on her mind. Eyes as black as a police boot with a 350 shine.
So I mentioned Cover Me Up by Jason Isbell earlier as one of the best written songs of this century. I think Cover Me Up is. I'd also throw Tame into that same conversation. So the past 21 years, I think this is one of the best written songs. This song gives me chills every time I hear it, which, by the way, is not common for me. I'm not the kind of person that listens to music and gets chills. So it's an outlier. Let me read off here what I believe to be one of the best verses of this century. She's got a hornet's nest inside her chest and a swarming on her mind. Eyes as black as a police boot with a 350 shine. There's oh so much for you to touch, but the handle has a blade. I think of those lyrics all the time. I don't know what it is about that. They're just the most piercing lyrics I've maybe ever heard. One of my favorite single lines in singer-songwriter history. No telling where that heart has been. I know it sounds simple, but there's so much to that. someone sleeping with a lot of people, you'd be like, oh, she gets around or he gets around. He's instead saying she's loved a lot of other people. And that's impactful. It's where has that heart been? And I've never really heard that done in a song before, where someone says it in that way. It's always stuck with me. And the most important thing about songwriting to me is the listener should have their own interpretation of what the song means. The song should make you think and then interpret it into your life and your experiences. These lyrics is why I think Tame is his best song.
Absolutely. My freshman year of college, I was in like an English 101 class and we had to do a poetry unit. And so I brought this in. She said that you couldn't do songwriters. So I just said that Corey Brandon was a poet and I chose Tame. And I got an A. The teacher loved the poem, quote unquote. My next choice is Tall Green Grass from the album 12 Songs.
We'll wash up all that makeup with a garden hose. Watch the freckles sparkle down the ridge.
Corey is, you can hear here, really adept at imagery. He has lines like, wash off all that makeup with a garden hose. Watch the freckles sparkle down the ridge of your nose. And you can just picture this moment in the summer and being with this person that you're so close to and everything about them is wonderful. And you can just see it if you close your eyes. Other simple lyrics that convey a lot of emotion. Only green, so like the grass, against the blue, the sky. It's only me against you. These are second grade words that just convey so much about this moment in the song. He also talks about only one other person can understand what this is like, being in love with this person. And that's the person who says cuckoo ca-choo, which could either be an allusion to Alvin Stardust, who had a song cuckoo ca-choo. It could obviously be from I'm the Walrus, John Lennon. It could also be from Simon and Garfunkel. It doesn't really matter. And I think this gets to a point about Corey's songs are always very intimate moments and it's still accessible to the listener, but there's always some sort of little inside joke that you had to be there to get. I think that's what draws in people to his songwriting so much because you can get the joke. It's not some really abstract concept, but you really have to be there to understand it. And I think there's also a theme here that we've talked a little bit about. I don't love the production of the track from this album, but only because I think it just really broke my expectations of what a Corey song should sound like, which that's more about me than it is about him. But like Jordan said, we've been hearing these songs for a really, really long time live, and hearing it for the first time that night when I went in and locked my room and door to my room and listened to it, it was really weird to hear it with guitar effects. But Corey takes chances. I'm not going to fault him for that.
Next track is A Girl Named Go from 12 Songs. So in the research this week, this song got stuck in my head the most. I mean, I've known it for many, many years, of course, but it just kept replaying over and over in my head. So it must be his most catchy song. It's another song that we love to see live, like Greg was just talking about. And even before the studio version existed, we loved this song. And I think it's arguably his most fun song, too. So if you're looking for a song to start with, maybe start with A Girl Named Go. And it's such a departure from some other songs in this playlist, like Tame and The Corner that we talked about. It's just so different. It's almost like a different artist. He just has that completely different sound on this. But even when it's stripped down, played live, it's still great.
He always introduces this live. It may or may not be about cocaine. My next song is Walk Around from Wolf and Cobra.
We could catch the express line to the Upper West Side bar cap party, or maybe we could catch a ride to Club Cap Subway bar cap hole. Sounds great, yo. Call you know. Text you later.
I just think this is a really fun song. Not everything about a crush or about love needs to be complicated, right? He plays this song with a ton of energy live. Like a lot of the songs we've talked about, he's screaming into the microphone, he's playing with pace, he's getting the acoustic guitar to go as fast as it can possibly go. And he always sings about crushes really effectively, but the narrator of this song doesn't want anything complicated or amazing. He just wants to take a walk. But the love interest of the song is sitting around waiting for something perfect. But it's a fun song. Definitely listen to it. Wolf and Cobra was a collab album he did with John Snodgrass. So it's not a Corey-only album, but it's definitely worth checking out.
Next track is Sour Mash from No Hit Wonder.
When I go below the gloomy ground, you better buy the room
Let her weep and lift a glass of bittersweet sour mash.
I love the sound of this song. You get very traditional southern country rock sound, and I wanted to do Dwight Yoakam in the artist comps. He was probably my fourth choice of the three. This song is why. It kind of has that Dwight Yoakam southern country sound to it, and it shows that Corey can do that traditional country route, and he executes it really well on Sour Mash.
She was born in a barrel of American oak made of sugar, maple, and charcoal smoke. It just goes to show your folks what God can do with water. Every time I drink whiskey, I play that in my head.
It's so good.
We could have just read off Corey lyrics the entire episode.
Yeah.
With the playlist, there's a bunch of other songs we could have chosen that Jordan and I love. Things like Last Man on Earth, Survivor Blues, Skateland South. Probably Crush is one of his best songs. But wanted to make sure that we got a pretty representative sample, especially about how his sound has evolved later on in his career. And so I chose something off his album No Hit Wonder called All the Rivers in Colorado.
All the rivers in Colorado couldn't wash you off my mind. Not that I'm trying, just the
And as far as his newer song go, I really like how expansive this one feels. It feels like the West. This like limitless sort of story that he unfolds about missing someone. It's much more of a just straight up country song. There's pedal guitar, there's many more instruments in the mix than just an acoustic guitar. And everyone's been in the position where they would trade pretty much anything to get someone back after they've lost them. And this song is sort of an example of that. I'd basically all the water and all the rivers of Colorado, it would take all of that pretty much to get you off my mind. And I would do anything to get you back. I love some of the choices again with just how specific and detailed he's able to describe things. So one is muddied root beer colored rivers run. A lazier songwriter could have said something like brown water or muddy water, but the choice of comparing the muddied water to the root beer color just immediately gets you to understand what that is. I also really like the play on words in this. He says that he's at an all-time Rocky Mountain low rather than being at a Rocky Mountain high. I like how that plays with your expectations a bit. It's a great song. Check it out.
Next track is Wayward and Down from The Hell You Say. Take a listen.
Sweet is the apple, dark is the town. I can't help falling.
So for the record, The Hell You Say, Corey's first album, is one of my favorite albums of the 2000s and 2010s. It's spectacular from start to finish, but I had a hard time narrowing down songs from this album, so I chose Wayward and Down. I had to have this one on our playlist because it's different. It's not a major departure for Corey, but it is different because it has harmonies. It has other people singing on it. It almost has an early Avett Brothers vibe to it, which I really like.
My last song, again, trying to get a really cross-representative sample of Corey, I chose Don't Go from Adios.
I said I sure had a real nice time tonight. This was my first New Year's dance.
Adios is Corey's sort of self-described death record, not in the way of death metal, although the cover kind of plays with that idea. This album came at a time where, you know, Corey had lost his dad. He was thinking a lot about his career, his life, thinking about grief and loss, and he poured all of that into this album. It's a very good record. It's not one that probably a lot of even Corey fans have listened to intently, maybe not early Corey fans, but you should. I definitely recommend checking out. This song specifically, it's really sad, and it shows just how much feeling Corey can convey through words. Very simple, but things like don't go, don't go, don't go. I know you got to get, but don't go just yet. There's a lot of beauty and pain in that line. The song is also very nostalgic, but in sort of the painful description of nostalgia, we think about nostalgia a lot of, oh, remember NBA Jam Tournament Edition in the 90s? That was really great. Remember drinking Surge? And we usually think about nostalgia as a positive emotion, but nostalgia really is a painful one because you know that there's no way that you're ever going to be able to go back to the way that things were. Another sort of emotion that this song conveys is just we just don't have a lot of time, and if we waste it, it's gone and we can't do anything about it. The song's about life, it's about death, and it really doesn't get any more serious than that. So I'm not trying to leave our playlist on a downer, but it does help show Corey's range. And even though he does have a great sense of humor, he can also sing songs like this. All right, Jordan, so let's get into some awards we're going to hand out to Corey here. Each of us gets 3 awards. We give it to Corey, but then also list some other artists you might give it to.
My first award is Best Artist You've Never Heard Of. And I have 3 artists on this list. Lucero from Memphis as well. Please listen to them. We've given them a couple shout-outs, but listen to Lucero. Beulah. Beulah is a great band. They opened for Cake. That's how I discovered them. If you like Cake, I think you'll like Beulah. And Shane Alexander, who is lesser known than Corey. Check out his album, The Sky Below. Second, Best Songwriters of the 21st Century. Corey Brandon makes the list. Also has Taylor Swift, Chris Martin, and Jason Isbell. And lastly, for me, the most underappreciated albums of all time. The Hell You Say is absolutely on that list. And Phantom Planet is missing. Phantom Planet's first debut album, which no one really knows, before California, and they hit it big and all that. It's so good. And Greg, you might be the only other person I know that likes or even knows that album exists.
I can't wait to do a Phantom Planet episode.
Yeah.
Huge Phantom Planet fans. Those are great. My 3, one is the Stop What You're Doing and Love This Artist Award. Intent here is, I don't care what you're doing, driving, you know, cooking, eating. You should immediately stop and just fall in love with this artist. One is Corey. I had Beulah on this list. Jordan kind of stole my thunder there. Beulah is an amazing band. I also have Haley Witters. She's getting her time in the sun right now. I saw her on the CMA Awards a couple weeks ago. So people are starting to pay attention. But Haley Witters should be an absolute star. Her song, 12 Years Into a 10-Year Town, is one of the best written songs in the last 5 years. And then another one I'll choose, I don't know if a lot of people know about, but Apollo Sunshine. There was a period of time in the early 2000s where I just absolutely loved Apollo Sunshine. And if you don't, you should love them too. Next I have is the Their Albums Are Great, But Their Live Shows Are Even Better award. First one, Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. Sharon Jones passed away a couple years ago. The albums are great, but seeing Sharon Jones live is one of the best live music experiences of my entire life. The energy was so high. Every single person was engaged every second. At one point, she literally invited people to jump on stage. So I got to jump on stage and dance with her. And there's actually a picture of me with long hair and a huge beard wearing a Ben Folds t-shirt and a Lacoste cardigan dancing with Sharon Jones. It's the most precious picture I have. You have to watch videos of Sharon Jones playing. Lucero is another band we've talked about a lot. You should love Lucero. We are probably going to do a Lucero episode at some point. It's hard to explain the feeling of going to a Lucero show. It's like punk alt country, especially in kind of the early days. It'd be really hot. You'd hear cicadas and bugs outside. There'd be humidity and there'd be sweat dripping off you. And you're just surrounded by all of these people in the pit of a club and listening to Lucero just absolutely fucking rock. And you have to hear them. Their albums are great, but their live shows are fantastic. And then Ben Folds. It's hard to explain if you haven't been to a Ben Folds show what it's like to be going to a Ben Folds show. But similar to like Jordan was saying earlier, where people yell out songs, Ben Folds does that, but with like 10,000 people in the audience, but like an arena show. He's interactive. He makes up music on the spot. And then my last one is, I remember them before they were famous. The first one is the Avett Brothers, which we've talked about in a previous episode. You can go back and hear about our origin stories with the Avett Brothers and why we love them so much. Corey is obviously one of these here. And then Kendrick Lamar is where I sort of like, I think pinned the my most pride on is knowing about Kendrick Lamar because I think at that point, like fifth grade student introduced me to him before Good Kid, Mad City came out. All right, so Jordan, this one kind of feels awkward to talk about with Corey because there's obviously not a lot negative that we can say about Corey because we love him so much. But let's talk here. Something that we talk about on every artist is what was their peak or what is their peak?
Yeah, I think it was in 2003. The night that he performed on The Late Show with David Letterman was his peak. And not there's anything wrong with that. I think he hasn't really achieved that level of recognition since. And he deserves a lot more recognition. We're doing this podcast episode on Corey because we want to cast more light on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think there was never a time in that 3 minutes, 4 minutes that he was more famous. He's playing on Late Show with David Letterman. A lot of people are watching him play. But I think as far as like mainstream peaks go, he might be more well recognized by critics on his last 2 records than his first 2, which is probably strange for you and me to think about. he's evolving as a musician and more people are taking notice. And so I hope he continues to record music because there is some momentum there. No Hit Wonder and Adios were both listed on Rolling Stone's best country records of the year. He could be entering in maybe a different peak of his career. But I do agree that sort of at Hell You Say and after Hell You Say, and it pisses me off to say this, because I think Corey sort of seems to be very aware of this, that at that point of his career, he had an almost limitless trajectory. People were comparing him to some of the all-time greats. And it didn't work out how we all thought it was going to work out for him. And I'm sure it didn't work out. You listen to The Corner, you can probably tell that it didn't work out the way he thought it would. He still had a fantastic career, and we still love his music. But I do think that his career could have probably gone a different direction. Last segment here, what would you like to see them do next? If you could manage Corey and say, hey, here's what I want your next choices to be, what advice would you give him?
So we started this podcast to talk about music, obviously. But why did we start this podcast? What's the point? Why are we doing this? And the answer is introducing people to either new music they've never heard before or rekindling the love of music they haven't heard in a long time. And doing an episode on Corey Brannan is very on brand for us, I think, now that you know why we're doing this. So I flipped this question on its head a bit. And what I'd like to see you do next is listen to his music. Give him a chance. I'm assuming that most people listening to this right now did not know Corey Brannan existed, right? And if you don't know Corey Brannan exists, how can he get the respect and admiration that he deserves? As for Corey and what I hope he does next, I hope he's happy. I hope he's living his best life. I hope he's fulfilled. And I'd like to see him do whatever he wants to do next.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that's great about Corey is he just does whatever the fuck he wants to do. He doesn't really kowtow to what people expect of him. And whether all those choices were the right choices, who cares? Because they're his. And so I want to hear him continuing to record music. If you've listened to him and followed him throughout the pandemic, Corey depends a lot on touring. And because he couldn't tour, he was very interesting on social media. He started a podcast. You can see different episodes, for example, one with Jason Isbell, and there's some others out there that are great. He released a bunch of music in the last year. He would take requests and recorded these mixtapes, of which, you know, I purchased all of those and they're fucking awesome. What I want to see him next is just continue recording music, and I want him to see him enter into this next arc of his career. I know there's a lot of great music left in him. I can't wait to support his future projects. Anything that he makes, I'm going to buy. I do think that he's going to hit a stride in his career that is going to be really amazing. We hope that if you never heard Corey before, the first thing you're going to do after this is go listen to him. If you live in Pennsylvania or Boston or New York or Rochester or Ohio or Costa Mesa, California or Portland, Oregon, you can go on his website and you can get tickets to see him between June and October. And I'm fucking jealous. It doesn't seem like he's playing in Nashville. I have a Google alert set up, Corey Brannan Nashville, that like anytime that pops, I'm sure Jordan and I will hopefully be able to see him this summer. But if you listen to this podcast and you live in one of those areas, you go to his website, go see him live, go support him live. And if you like him and if you got into him at all, buy some of his merch, support him. He absolutely deserves it. We need to keep his career going. Well, Jordan, that wraps us up. Check out the playlist that we're making that accompany these episodes. The easiest way to find it is by going to www.soundsgoodtous.com. There's a link there that you can check them all out.
Thank you. See ya.